you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour. You're about to hear the continuation of the epic Romano-Saxon War by Josh Hutchins. This is the audio version of our first Twilight Histories book, written by Josh Hutchins. If you're enjoying this series, I highly recommend you pick up the book. And now, on to the story.
The men pull their oars inside the boat and let the current haul us downriver. The hush of the river in spring lulls me into calm, but not to sleep. I'm tired. My throat aches from crying. But I'm cried out, numb. I smell the earthy humus of muddy riverbanks, and I feel the sunshine on my skin as we pass in and out of the shade from ancient oaks and elm trees. 10,117.
And how many are on these boats?
Well, I've taken some 7,891 heads, Derigos. You do the math, Kindheart.
Ah, it is enough. That is all that matters. Derigos will be pleased.
Well, not really, since her daughter was
Say, is there any ale in this miserable boat of yours?
Yeah. I think the apprentice is sitting on a barrel of good ale. They pause. I feel them looking at me. But I just sit here, holding my head in my hands, staring at the floor.
It can wait, Praxo sighs. How many days back to Saxony?
We're technically already in Saxony. This little expedition we've been on the last year has expanded Saxon territory. Last I saw Derigos, I reported the progress to her, and that we seemed intent on maintaining the semblance of control in this region.
For God's sakes, Glycerin, just tell me, how long must I be on this boat?
Sorry, bloke. About 8 days.
Now, thank you. What were you saying?
Oh, nothing you don't already know. Why don't you tell me what you've been doing since I left? Nobody's told me much of anything. And the apprentice is... well, he's been somewhat preoccupied. I hear someone, probably Praxos, let out a large breath.
Sextus gave us an ultimatum. We told him to stick it up his... we told him no. With all the people who'd left for planting in the spring, the Romans had us outnumbered nearly 3-1. We sent raiders to harass them on their march, and they were largely successful, but it wasn't enough. The apprentice wasn't confident that we could hold the Castra, so we rigged it with incendiaries. The Romans assaulted the Castra nearly as soon as Sextus returned to his lines. Catapults, rams, ladders, they came on strong. Once the main gate was breached and the apprentice was injured, he gave the signal to withdraw. We fled to our fortified camp on our side of the river and waited for the Romans to spring the trap. Nearly 300 of them perished in the flames.
Trap?
Yes. A nasty bit of engineering for the apprentice. It was a time-delayed fire trapping the Romans in the fort.
Then what? They just left?
Ha! No. They came at us across the bridge like rabid dogs. Like well-disciplined dogs. Oh yes, the Roman cannot speak ill of his own people now, can he? I asked you not to do that, Kindheart. You know me. You know my heart. Yes, I also know that the Romans killed Ingrid, along with many other good men. Good men! And they nearly killed my Hecate. I am not a Roman. Stop!
I lift my head to glare at them. Sending Ingrid and Hecate out of the fort was my decision. Praxos didn't give that order. He had nothing to do with it. You know that, Kindheart. It was my order. My fault. Mine. I ordered her to her death. I did that. I swallow. They continue to stare at me with unblinking eyes. I thought they would be safer far away from the Castra. Far away from the battle certain to come. I thought we sent enough guards with them. I thought our scouts had found no Roman activity on our side of the river. I was wrong. I was wrong about everything.
Apprentice, there was no Roman activity on our side of the river until that day. We found the place where the Roman scouts crossed the Rhine on horse. It was a party of no more than 20 soldiers, far from the Castra at Xanatan. It's not your fault.
Whose fault is it then, huh?
The gods are punishing us for something.
I shake my head. I don't believe that. If gods were punishing us, then why do we have all this? I gesture to an unbelievable heap of iron swords at the center of the boat. Why would a vengeful god allow us this victory? No, I'm the one being punished. Not you. Not the army. Not Saxony. Me. I turn to look at the other boats, floating the river with ours. A flotilla of some 20 ships. Kindheart, stop blaming Praxos. Whatever part of Rome inside of him is dead now. I think it died back in Britannia. I push myself to my feet and hold a rigging line for balance. My concern is that Daragos will burn me in the Wicker Man for getting her daughter killed. I deserve it, I guess.
So how long do we let him talk like this?
He's not sitting on the ale anymore, so now's our chance.
Indeed, will one of you be so kind as to pour me a drink?
I can't. I'm steering the boat.
Get it yourself,
Praxos says.
I would. My mouth says yes, but my leg says no. Or would you have me break my leg again for a cup of ale?
I turn to them. Praxos, help me with this. I think I could use a drink too.
Fine.
Together we lift the keg. I remove the bung and pour 4 cups full, then a cup for each crewman. Then Hecate holds up a cup.
Please, I could really use a drink right now.
I smile at her and pour. When I finish, she kisses me on the cheek. I seal the keg and seat myself on top of it again. Praxos, I don't want to hear about gods or blame or Ingrid right now. But please continue with what you were telling Glycerin. I could use the distraction. Praxos takes a tiny drink and shrugs.
Very well. Where was I? Well, with Kynard's son, Olfin, remaining at the fort at Wolfnoth to keep an eye on the Romans, we should be safe from any Roman incursions for some time. Furthermore, he'll be able to administer to the area effectively, especially with the addition of the fortified camp near Haltern. This is a level of government with which the Saxons are unfamiliar. But we will manage. According to Marcus, the quartermaster, we've confiscated enough Roman armor and swords to equip more than 7,000 soldiers. That, in addition to the soldiers we've already trained and equipped, along with the crossbow women, should be an army greater than 12,000 strong. The gold coins alone have made Dergos the richest person in Saxony.
Yeah, and from what I've seen, she's been using that money to build the ships for our return to Britannia. I nod. It's almost strange to think about it right now. The return to Britannia. Feels like a lifetime ago when we were there. Thorium, Hengst, Maximian, Orestes, Priam. I wonder about the look on Thorium's face when the guards told him we'd escaped. They all chuckle. We'll probably have to wait until next spring before we attack the island, though. I don't see how there's enough time to do it this year.
Questions for when we reach Dergos, apprentice?
True. I gesture with my cup to Kindheart. What else, Praxos?
That's pretty much it. We left enough soldiers at Wolfnoth and Holtern to hold the area. Our final casualty count is...
I hold up a hand. Not right now, please. I don't want you to stop, but don't tell me that number. Just... not yet. He nods. Can Dergos really manage the entirety of Saxony? I'm not convinced the tribal council system is enough to administer anything outside her current lands. At a certain point, Glycerin, tribal government ceases to be effective. I'm not saying the Roman system is perfect. Far from it. I'm just saying it's a step in the right direction. Roman administrators are notorious for their corruption and ineptitude. To administer the land, I think there are three functions. Military defense, a court system, and a way to pay for it. So if Ulfin can do those three things well, and refrain from trying to do more, he'll be fine. Praxos furrows his brow.
What about roads?
Let the people build roads if they like them. So long as Ulfin keeps the Saxons in the area safe from invaders, and holds any thieves on the road accountable to the law, then the Saxon people will be free to spend their money on whatever they like, including roads. If Ulfin decides he needs a road between Wolfnoth and Haltern for military reasons, that's one thing. But as soon as he starts building roads to town simply because it will help trade, or because a rich noble requests it, that's when things start to go south. I don't want to get all preachy on you, but I've seen it happen firsthand.
In Rome?
No, not Rome. A place you'd never heard of.
That Klingon place I hear you talking about one time?
I smile. My eyes focus on nothing. No, not there either.
Yeah. Ingrid talked about Klingons a lot when you weren't nearby,
Kindheart says.
I think she wanted to be Klingon, though I'm not sure what that means.
I know this. Revenge is a dish best served cold. The coast of Saxony, near the village where Dergos is chiefess. I heard a Saxon refer to it as Myrdorf one time, but I don't know if that's accurate. The Saxons just call the place Dergos, so I can never tell if they are referring to the person Dergos or the village itself. Some things I guess my chip just doesn't translate. I feel like I'm stuck in that episode of Star Trek, Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra. There's nobody to greet us, only a dim fire, marking the shore in the darkness, a crude lighthouse. Ours is the last to make land. A man throws a rope forward, and several men on the beach take hold and pull us under the shore.
Apprentice, are you ready for this?
I say nothing. Motionless, I stare at the wavy lines of the Damascus steel blade on my hands. I've been staring at it for hours, marveling at how it wasn't broken. A soft figure in blue kneels in front of me.
Apprentice, look at me.
She gently takes the sword from my hands and gives it to Kindheart. Then she holds both of my hands in hers.
You are a good man. You have a kind heart. Ingrid loved you for this. Daragos saw it in you as well. But Ingrid is gone now, and Daragos must hear it from you. You are like a son to her, I know it. You must do this.
I lift my head to meet her eyes with mine. Her eyes are soft brown orbs, gentle and understanding. Mine are red and raw, exhausted, despondent, dead inside. I'm not strong enough.
You will not be alone. We will all be with you.
I swallow, then nod my head and tighten my lips.
Come.
She stands and leads me to the front of the boat where Kindheart, Praxos, and Glycerin now stand in the ankle-deep water on the beach below. I climb out of the boat. Glycerin puts an arm around my shoulder, and Praxos leads the way to the village. Torches and armored warriors line the path, and we follow it straight to the large round hut of Daragos. I'm beginning to think that notion of them not expecting us was a bit off. A guard at the door pulls the leather flap aside, allowing us to enter. Inside, the air is heavy with smoke and laden with the odor of burning herbs. Like deja vu, the walls are lined with people, and Daragos stands near a central fire. Her hair holds a touch more gray than before, and she stares at the fire like she's in a trance. She wears a tan robe, which reaches the floor. It's clasped at her waist with a wide leather belt, held with a bronze buckle. I'm glad not to see Potsa. That would be strange indeed, since she died nearly a year ago. But I can't be certain of anything. The smoke. The flickering yellow flames. It's late spring now, and the fire's making it hot in here. A bead of sweat runs down my back, and another down my cheek. I feel the presence of my friends around me. Daragos, she holds up a finger, requesting silence, never allowing her eyes to stray from the flames. Kindheart leans into me and whispers in my ear,
"Wait, apprentice, just wait. She is consulting the gods, reading their words at the flames."
She continues to stare at the fire, whispering and humming to herself. At length she nods and turns to us.
"I have asked Freya, Lord of War, Goddess of Life, and the Keeper of Wisdom for her guidance."
She holds her arms out to her sides, palms facing up.
"She speaks now."
Her hawkish eyes dart around the room, as if daring anyone to challenge her assertion. She turns to me.
"Freya told me of your coming. I saw you in your boats. You, apprentice, carry tidings, both light and dark."
She tilts her head from side to side. "Your tidings, your arrival is... Oh, Freya." Her lips tremble. Then she looks around the room, going from face to face. Where is my Ingrid? She closes her eyes and breathes deeply. Dergos, I'm sorry. Ingrid died in my arms. The Romans... No! She breathes heavily. No! No! My son lost to treachery on Sacre Island. Now my daughter killed by the Romans. No! I... She straightens. Apprentice, tell me everything. I walk downstairs at the inn. Light rain patters on the roof. The dining hall smells like slowly cooked meat and onions. The wooden support post looks like it's just a debarked tree. It's 2 feet in diameter and worn smooth with innumerable hands over the years. I lean against it and watch my friends at the breakfast table.
Yes. I know how to get to Britannia. I think we all know that. But how do we get Hengst and Thorium to fight us at a place of our choosing? If we sail right up the Thames, we'll be slaughtered,
Praxos says, gesturing wildly with both of his hands. Kynhard takes a large drink of his morning ale and leans back in his seat.
Can we pretend to attack in one place, then attack in another?
We need a way to draw the entire Romano-Britain army away from Londinium, away from their walls, Glycerin says, just before tearing a hunk of bread with his teeth.
I watch them for a moment, somewhat proud of what I've created. They're a team. The place I'm standing is still drenched in morning shadows, so they don't know I'm here yet. A servant girl walks around the table with a pitcher, filling each ale cup.
What you're doing here is a crime, love, Glycerin says to the girl.
She gives a confused frown.
Those beg for freedom. I'm sorry, love, but it must be done.
He reaches for her chest. Be free, my friends. She cuffs him on the ear.
I'm only trying to help you.
She blushes and giggles.
You are a good liar,
she says in a squeaky voice. She then turns and leaves the room.
Glycerin, you know that girl is Egric's daughter, right?
Good. So he won't be competing for her favor, I presume. I mean, this is Saxony.
Glycerin's face curls into a smile.
Glycerin, I wouldn't put my straw in that juice box if I were you.
I walk out of the shadows and sit next to Praxos. Glycerin squints.
I'm not quite sure what that means, apprentice, but I'm certain I disagree.
I smile. History will not remember you as Glycerin the Chaste. I shake my head and sigh. As much as I'd like to imagine you asking Egric for access to his daughter's juice box, I think we have strategy to discuss.
First, tell him about the boats.
Praxos gestures Glycerin with a short eating knife.
I counted 40 boats tied up on the shore this morning.
40?
40 fishing boats.
He shakes his head.
40 warships?
Ships for taking us to Britannia? He nods.
How? How did Dergos build that many boats?
I don't think she had them built. I think she bought them. They aren't all the same, apprentice. If you look closely, you can see slight differences in design and workmanship in many of them. But they'll do the job.
I grab Kynhard's cup of ale and drink it in one gulp.
He shrugs. This is about to get real, then. We're really going back. Everyone nods. You were discussing ways to draw Thorium's army away from Londonium. I have an idea for that. How far do we want to drag them? Praxo shrugs.
As far north as we can.
Okay, how about this? We sail the fleet up the Thames just enough to get Thorium's attention. Then, we turn around and sail along the coast all the way up to York. Eyjafjallajökull, Jorvik, Eyborgum, whatever the damn place is called nowadays. I sigh. We sack Eyborgum, then, as soon as Thorium arrives with his army, we get back in the ships and race south. We can beat him back to Londonium and take the town while it's undefended.
But if they see our fleet, they will know we come in strength. Will they not adjust their moves?
We can send only a portion of the fleet up the Thames. Then, when we sail north, we'll keep some of the ships out of sight of land. We can use a signal of some sort to turn west once we reach Eyborgum. The door creaks, and a small boy, soaking wet, enters. He walks to Kynhard and looks at the floor.
What is it, boy?
The Roman prisoners are here.
It matters not if you beat me, not even if you kill me. Your heathen gods cannot bring back your Saxon whore, any one of which...
I punch him in the ribs. The impact sends a thrilling sensation up my arm and into my brain. He wheezes and coughs. Call Ingrid a whore again, and
you'll what? Hit me? Cut off my head? Ha! I know my life is forfeit, Saxon. Why waste your breath with threats?
I backhand him across the face. He shrugs, letting blood drip down his nose. Then he smiles, his teeth drenched in red.
She must have been something else, huh? You sent your woman back across the river, fought to rescue her, but she died in your arms. Sad, really. I guess it explains your rage in attacking us after so many good soldiers of mine died in the flames of Xenaton. Such anger, such hate.
He levels his eyes at me.
You may think you've won something here, Saxon, but you haven't. This isn't the end of Rome. It never is. In time, Rome will rebuild the frontier and send an expedition here to punish all of Saxony for what you've done. You've merely guaranteed Saxony's ruin. Those paltry forces you left to guard the border.
He shakes his head.
Did your whore give you one last...
I knee him in the guts. He strains to double over, causing his ropes to groan overhead. The silence of the dark room seems shattered each time he struggles. With his arms stretched overhead, and his feet tied to the pole behind him, he is a compliant punching bag. I punch him again in the nose, splashing blood on his cheeks and in his eyes.
You are very brave, beating a helpless man.
This isn't about proving my bravery, General. This is about punishment, the punishment you deserve for Ingrid's death. She was alive until the day I met you. Blood and sweat drip off his chin and run down his body. The gray and black hair on his chest is matted from previous beatings and dirty from the long road march here from Xanathan.
Come now, Saxon. It's just you and me. I will die soon. So I lie. Why lie to me? Why lie to yourself?
What lie would that be? I begin pacing the dirt floor.
You blame yourself for your whore's death.
I stop and turn at him.
What? No slap? No punch? No witty comeback?
I don't blame myself. I blame you.
Fine. Then kill me and be done with it.
I already told you. A quick death is better than you deserve.
Ha!
Is this circular conversation not torture enough?
The leather flap to the hut pushes open, casting pale sunshine on Sextus. The silhouette of a large man fills the opening. He turns to others outside and says,
"Wait outside."
He enters slowly.
"Apprentice, General Sextus."
Praxos nods to us in turn. Then he looks at me with something just short of a glare.
"Can I speak to you, apprentice? Outside."
"We can talk right here," I snap. He takes a breath and lets it out slowly.
"The general is to be left unharmed. He has an audience with Daragos tonight. I believe those were your orders, apprentice."
I nod. "Yes, those are my orders."
"Are you saying your orders don't apply to yourself? That would be very unlike you when..."
"Damn it, Praxos!"
"This man is the reason Ingrid is dead." He tightens his lips and nods. Then he arches his eyebrows and walks around to Sextus. An earthy, iron-like odor fills the hut.
"Ingrid loved you, apprentice. She was a strong, beautiful woman, and she could have had any man she wanted. But she chose you. Why?"
I look away from his stony eyes.
"She wanted you because you were different. Her apprentice would not do what you are doing now.
You and Kynhard beat Tuco, remember? If my memory serves true, you cut off his face, didn't you?" He shrugs.
"Yes. We were trying to get information from him. What information are you hoping to get out of the general here?"
I point at Praxos. "No. When you cut off his face, you weren't trying to get information. You did it because of him mentioning women and children in Rome."
"Yes. And I should not have done it. We may have gotten more information from him still. And my actions were reflexive. It was a quick reaction. What you're doing here goes well beyond that, apprentice."
"You should listen to your friend. Nobody asked you."
I make a hopping step and punch Sextus in the guts. He slumps against the ropes holding him to the pole.
"You don't know how it feels to lose..."
Praxo smiles.
"Care to finish that thought, apprentice? I don't know how it feels to lose... what? My family? My wife? My children? The people I love most in the world? Come now. Surely you weren't about to say that."
I exhale. "What am I going to do now, Praxos? What am I going to do now?"
"It looks like pretty much every Sax in the world is here now, apprentice. I hope you've got your speech ready."
Glycerin tippy-toes looking around, then smirks at me. I huff. "You've been listening to Praxos' jokes again, haven't you?" "No, I'm just here to watch. I'm not giving any speeches." We stand towards the front of a smelly host of men and women. Children are constantly running through the gaps in between, looking for the best place from which to watch. The stars are masked with a thin layer of clouds, making it very dark. The surrounding torches alone prevent total blackness. Praxos arches his eyebrows at me. Glycerin leans against a large-breasted woman who I don't know and whispers something in her ear.
"There is Daragos. Should begin soon,"
Kynhard says, nodding his head at the scene in front of us. Hecate next to him sucks in a large breath.
"Oh, look."
Several men are tying someone to a wooden frame. His arms are lashed with leather straps to a crossbeam, bending him forward over a rounded wooden stump. His bare back exposed to the few people standing to his rear. A rippling chill cascades down my spine.
"Behold, Saxons," Daragos says, with her arms outstretched, as she walks to the front of the small raised area next to the tied-up man. She has a woven cloth headband holding back her hair, and she wears a long cloth gown.
"Behold, the arbiter of our misery, the cause of our woes, the Roman responsible for my daughter's death. I give you General Lucius Sextus."
She gestures to the man. Flames from a nearby fire behind her crackle into life, casting a pale glow on his body. His face is stone. Daragos holds out a hand towards me. She wears a slight smile, but there's a glint of something else in her eyes.
"Remember what we talked about, apprentice."
I nod to Praxos, but I'm unable to turn my eyes from those of Daragos. I feel like I'm locked in a trance with her. My feet step forward, propelling me towards her. The glint of mania and ecstasy in her eyes growing more intense as I approach. Daragos takes my hand and softly pulls me into an awkward embrace. She places her lips almost touching my ear.
"Now I will truly test if you are Saxon or Roman."
She pulls back and places her hands on my shoulders.
"Freya has told me that you must be the one to complete the ceremony."
I scrunch my eyebrows.
"Ceremony?"
"Yes. I wanted the general unharmed just for you, for my Ingrid."
The nearby fire pit surges to the repeated blast of air from a leather bellows. I lean to look behind Daragos. They have several swords heating in the fire. The smell of hot iron and smoke fills the air.
"So, you want me to cut off his head?"
"Hell, I'll cut his balls off if you want." Sextus gives me a sideways glance, and we meet eyes for a heartbeat.
"I was hoping you would be so willing."
"No,
we have tradition in Saxony."
She smiles again, a very odd smile. She walks past me and holds her hands out to the crowds of people again, hushing their conversations almost instantly. She holds her hands to the night sky.
"Oh, Freya, bless this sacrifice. Bless our people and our lands that we might prosper and worship you without even greater strength, that we might vanquish our foes and subjugate our neighbors. Take this man's soul and his pain and wash us in your blood, O Freya."
She turns and levels a sober stare at me.
"You may begin."
I shift my eyes back and forth. Okay. I begin to draw my sword, but one of the men nearby places a hand on mine and stops me. He gestures to the blades glowing yellow, stuffed into the coals of the fire. I cringe.
"Why?"
"I'm pretty sure I can take his head off with one sweep of my sword." The man shakes his head, then gently turns me to the side with a hand on my shoulder. He traces a line down my spine.
"What? Cut him down his back? Why? Then what?"
The man nods, then makes a pulling gesture at my sides. I wipe a bead of sweat out of my eyes.
"Pull the skin?
Pull the skin? Why?
Can't you just tell me? What's with all the charades?"
The man opens his mouth to reveal a black hole, devoid of teeth and tongue. Daragos says,
Chew must give General Sextus the blood eagle. Cut and pull the skin as he showed you. I will do the rest.
I reach out to the handles sticking out of the fire. The man gives me a wet cloth. Thanks for the oven mitt, I say. I grab a sword by the hilt. The moist cloth hisses and steams. My heart is about to beat out of my chest. It's pounding in my ears. I raise the sword and walk to a spot just behind Sextus. Thousands of Saxon eyes follow my every move without so much as a blink. I lower the blade to an inch from his skin. I glance at Daragos, and she gives me an approving nod. Sextus's skin is well tanned and stretched tight over his lifelong muscles, and because of him being bent forward, sweat beads up and glistens over his entire body. The superheated blade cuts into his skin like a laser pin through paper. I start at the base of his neck and carve a long trench in his back, all the way to the top of his butt crack. He screams at first, then chokes, then weeps. There is no blood. The heat of the blade instantly cauterizes the cut I make. It's amazing how much skin and muscle there is on his back before I reach his ribcage. The man at the fire pit, using his own oven mitt, hands me a new sword, glowing intensely orange. I hand him the first blade, now dim red, spotted with gray. I cut across the top of the first cut, and across the bottom, making a large capital I on his back. Sextus quivers and gags. The smell of burning flesh and hair begins to register in my brain. The entire host of Saxons is silent, save for an eerie, hushed chanting of sorts. My hands are shaking. The man takes my sword again and places it back into the fire to reheat. He then makes the same pulling gesture with his hands. I walk to Sextus's side and sink my fingers into the open wound in his back and begin tugging the skin, pulling it away from his bones. Sextus goes silent.
Stop, Daragos says. He must be awake for entire blessing for Freya.
The men nearby attempt to revive him. I turn away, the pit of my stomach rapidly escalating into a choking lump in my throat. I know if I vomit, I'll lose respect here. I can't afford to lose my cool. Absent-mindedly, I rub my palms across my face, smearing blood everywhere.
Apprentice, you may begin again.
Daragos holds a hand towards the general. I go to his other side and rip his skin back as quickly as I can without jerking on him. The men begin to thread huge bone needles through the edges of his skin and pull it back against the wooden frame, exposing his ribs from behind. Sextus pants and moans. He's pissed himself and soiled himself. He sprays vomit on the ground in front of him. I'm considering doing all three myself. Daragos takes a small hand axe and begins chopping his ribs away from his spine. Sextus retches and jerks with each thunk of the axe. Blood splatters everywhere. For the first time, I look at the crowd. My eyes lock with Praxos. We stare at each other. Remember what we talked about, I whisper to myself. In one swift motion, I snatch a hot sword from the fire pit and plunge it into Sextus from behind, piercing his heart and protruding out the front of his body, ending with a thud when it hits the wooden log.
No!
Daragos shouts. Sextus shakes violently, as if he's possessed. His skin and meat sizzles like a steak on the grill. Then his skin burst into flames as the fat in his body is rendered into grease. He squeals like a hog as he is engulfed of the conflagration of himself. He pulls on his bonds, breaking the skin. His legs contort and flex as his hair catches fire. He still screams. His entire body burns, and he screams. He screams. He screams. Dergos grabs me by the elbow and violently jerks me to her face.
What have you done? Freya will surely curse us for this.
She turns back to Sextus, waving her hands in some vain attempt to settle the crowd. But everyone else is screaming too. Weeping children hide behind the skirts of their screaming mothers, who hold the arms of their dumbfounded husbands. Only one man stares back at me with a glint of satisfaction. His short cropped beard and red tunic, clearly visible in the orange glow of the light provided by the general's fire. Praxos nods at me. I find a quiet hidden corner of the chaos and puke my guts out.
If you enjoyed this show, consider picking up a copy of the book on Amazon or through the website at twilighthistories.com. It's our first Twilight Histories book, and Josh has put a huge amount of effort into it, expanding the story and making sure it was edited and beta tested. It's a solid, well-crafted book, and if you enjoy listening to it, why not have it on your shelf? When you purchase it, please give it a generous rating on Amazon. This will help the book get picked up by Amazon's search engines, so it will be visible to others. You can find the book on Amazon by running a search for Josh Hutchins or Romano-Saxon War, or by going to the website at twilighthistories.com. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening, and take care.